Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today we present 50 questions for Gail Simone. Writing popular DC titles like Birds of Prey and the Infinite Crisis spinoff Secret Six, Gail has delighted readers with her humor, sharp dialogue, exotic story locales, and unique action. In these questions, Gail also gives us sneak peeks at her upcoming runs on the all-new Atom and a new Gen 13 series for Wildstorm. Our conversation begins with a quick word about Gail's online blog, Bloodstains on the Looking Glass, at happystains.blogspot.com.
I enjoyed the blog, and I understand that you probably don't have a lot of time where you could do it every day, but every time you do put an entry in, it's very funny.
Oh, thank you. It's kind of fun just to do something like that once in a while, but it's, you know, not something I have to do.
Do you use it as like a writing exercise, or is it just kind
of
a way?
An exercise. I just, yeah, well, in terms of if I... You know, I have kind of this weird sense of humor, and if I'm writing something serious and I haven't been able to exercise that humor part for a while, then, yeah, I got to go do something
okay.
to kind of get that out so it doesn't come out weird on during the serious parts that I'm writing. Like, all of a sudden, you know, it'll be like someone's death scene, and I'll say something stupid. So then I'll like, okay, I got to get this out of my system.
All right, let's get started. These are questions from JinxWorld.com's message board.
Hey, Jinx World.
And Comic Block Forums, that's Jeff John's place.
Hey, Jeff John's place.
And of course, Gail's own representation at You'll All Be Sorry at comicbookresources.com.
Hey, everyone.
So let's begin. These are 50 questions that we've gotten, around 50 questions, from various readers. We'll start with Star Edcraft, who asks, what female DC characters have you not yet used in any shape or form, even if it was a no-dialogue appearance, that you've wanted to use, and also which Marvel ones?
Well, I think a lot of people know that Mary Marvel is one of my favorite characters, and Captain Marvel, too. But as far as the females go, I'd love to do Mary Marvel sometime, and Dan has told me that I can use her in Birds of Prey, but I haven't felt the time is right yet.
Okay.
So we haven't done that yet, and Supergirl, of course. I'm loving the new Supergirl. And then for Marvel, it'd probably have to be She-Hulk.
Okay.
Because for me, aside from the X-Men characters, most of the classic Marvel female characters just aren't that interesting to me. That was kind of one of their weaknesses then. So for me, if it's not going to be an X character, it'd have to be She-Hulk.
Cape and Cowl asks, how do you keep a character like Catman, who you've been doing a great job with, by the way, from sort of slipping into being yet another copy of Batman, given his similar temperament and, let's face it, costume?
I like making him interesting despite those elements. You know, the fact that his costume's like Batman or that he was originally created like that really doesn't affect the way I think about him too much, especially when I was going in and thinking, you know, what could make this character really interesting again. Mm-hmm. And I just think that he's badass no matter what he's wearing, and clothes don't always make the villain. And I just felt, for me, Catman, the new version of him, is more inspired by the heroes from the pulp.
Sure.
Like Tarzan or John Carter from Mars. I always think of him as a savage with a civilized veneer. He's pretty much, he's not like Batman in that he's the wealthy businessman on the one hand and then the costume hero out for vengeance on the other. Catman's pretty much always savage.
That first appearance in Villains United, he looked like Kazar. And had that. Well, and as you say, too, Tarzan and stuff, because those were all pulp characters. And even Kazar, before Marvel Comics, really, in 1934, was a Marvel pulp, or a timely pulp, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. And then when we first got that art from Dale, I knew, you know, he understood everything that I had in mind for that character. He just drew on it and made it even better. And speaking of sexy Catman pictures, what most people don't know is that I get a lot of tearful late-night calls from Bendis asking for more Catman. And I don't know.
Is that the first male character that he's gone crazy for you? From you?
I don't know. I don't know if I should go into his personal habits.
Michael Painter asks, what's the first arc of Tranquility going to center on?
Well, fried chicken and adult diapers.
Can we see the birds be taken to Black Hawk Island in the future?
Well, back to the Tranquility, you know, it's a pretty tight murder mystery.
Okay.
Where we introduce, well, you know, I've got to get the plug in. Come on.
You say as much as you want or as little in terms of spoilers, and that's what I figured you were doing.
Hey, it's pretty tight murder mystery where we introduce the town as part Mayberry and part Metropolis, I guess.
Okay. It's,
you know, all the adventure and sex of a good superhero comic with just some wrinkles and some preparation age thrown in.
And they ask again, yeah, can the birds be taken to Black Hawk Island in the future?
Well, I do hope to tell more of Lady Black Hawk's story because I'm just crazy about the Black Hawk. But
me too.
It's just going to be a ways down the road.
That's cool.
I can't do it right away.
Would you ever want to do the full Black Hawk team?
Oh, yeah, if I ever had the chance, definitely.
There you go. Well, you got to bug Dan. That's great. Are there pet projects like that? Because no one really asked that question in terms of, like, boy, I would kill if I could do X.
I do have that. I would like to do the Marvel family.
Okay.
Some part of the Marvel family someday down the road, and I would like to do more Wonder Woman.
Cool. Did you read Alan's first story?
Yes.
Very cool.
Oh, great.
It oh, yeah.
looks so beautiful, yes. Yay.
And then Michael asks, where did Black Alice come from in your head?
Black Alice actually goes back quite a ways. When I was writing Yab, Mark Waid and I were actually correspondents at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd send him, like, little Yab jokes and things back and forth, and he was writing JLA at that time. And I happened to say, I think it'd be really fun to have a really bad female villain for the JLA to go up against. And he liked that idea, but he just didn't know who to use, which kind of drove me crazy at the time, because, like, what? We can't come up with a great female villain, you know, for them to go up against. And so I spent all that night, you know, I couldn't get it out of my mind, and I spent that night thinking about different female villain type characters. And I came up with the Queen of Fables, which he did use in the JLA arc that he was doing at the time. And I also created Mary Zero, which I used in Agent X. And then Black Alice was the third one. And I just was really happy to finally get a chance to get her character into a book that was appropriate and get her character started. Because I always thought that she was a really great character that would have interesting powers and would touch people. And pull them in.
Research seems to have always been something you have said has been important to your books. How much does it help with Birds of Prey and with all their old and new projects?
The DC Encyclopedia is my new best friend. The truth is, and I think people don't believe me when I say it, but the truth is that I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of comics like Mark Waid or Kurt Busiek. They're like huge gaps where I didn't read comics at all, and to this day I'll still, like, mix up the Vision and the Red Tornado with crazy stuff like that, and I'll be talking to someone like Mark Waid, and they're like, what the hell? Is that what you don't know this? So I'm constantly having to make sure that I have that stuff right. It doesn't stay in my brain like theirs does. Other things maybe that I don't want to stay in my brain might stay there, but I rely on a lot of research and a lot of research on location. And if I'm writing that Lady Blackhawk is going to steal a plane and, you know, that's going to become one of the new bases for the Birds of Prey, I want to know what kind of plane she would drive, you know,
sure.
fly and all that stuff. So I have to go in and research the same way with guns and all that kind of stuff. And I love it. I've always loved research and studying and finding out as much as I can about anything. So I would say it plays a big part.
Why did you choose Gypsy as a new team member? I've always liked her, but she's a C-list character to many people.
C-list characters represent. I like writing the characters that haven't had a chance to shine yet. And with Gypsy, I really like her innocence and the fact that the birds' methods are really a bit too dark for her. And I think that creates an interesting dynamic in the team where, you know, Oracle's kind of heading it up and they've got their mode of operation that they're used to, and she's just not quite sure about it. The same way with Lady Shiva, she'll go too far.
Sure.
And so when you mix all that together, I think it makes kind of an interesting way to play off of each character's and their beliefs and how they're going to come to basically the same result.
Will we get a more Babs-centric arc soon?
Yes.
Okay.
There's something huge coming in issue 100, and people are going to be really surprised.
Cool. Mike says that he has OCD and was really happy about how you depicted Calculator in the arc prior to 1 year later. I really appreciate how well you treated those with mental illness in the past, and I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate a serious and not overly monkish take on the disorder.
Well, thank you. That is actually nice to hear, because when I am going to write a character like that, or even Rose and Thorn in that book, I try to bring in as true and human of characteristics of it as possible. And it doesn't matter if they're fighting aliens or whatever, I still want them to have human hearts. And I want it to seem like this really could be what drives this character, or, you know, puts them over the edge, or whatever their situation might be. I want it to feel like it's real and that it could happen.
Any hopes on seeing the Ravens in Birds of Prey or Secret Six?
Actually, they do appear in Secret Six, and it gets ugly. And, you know, you might want to mention, everyone who's listening to this, to Brian Bendis, that Secret Six is the book that Catman appears in. So he might want to pick it up that week instead of his usual teen beat.
What are your favorite pieces of art that you've gotten from artists? I know the Catman commission, but I hear that there were some other ones that you've gotten that were pretty awesome.
Oh, man, you wouldn't believe it. I have a little art gallery in my hallway at home.
That's cool.
And so I have things in there like a Bruce Timm page for when he did a short story in Birds of Prey.
Wow.
I have Jason Lefko, Gus Beezer, the original designs for that. I have Leah Hernandez, Killer Princesses.
Cool.
I have Eduardo Barreto, Lady Blackhawk.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
I bet.
And then I have Udon with Outlaw jumping out the window and the broken glass going all over.
Cool.
I have Michael Golden, Golden Age Black Canary from the flashback issue.
Wow.
Which is awesome in itself, but then you turn it over, which this one I don't have displayed because I can't figure out how to, which side, because you turn it over and he drew an original Black Canary sketch. When he says, it was good for me too, best wishes, G.
Oh.
So that was just like, eat it, Bendis! Ha ha ha!
His other question is, it seems that you really like using Eurasia and Asia as a locale, especially as seen in Secret Six and Birds of Prey. I know you said you've traveled to China and other places, but I'm interested in what you like about the culture. I really love the cinematic feeling you've brought in your arcs. Can we get some hints on some future locales the Birds will be going to soon?
Okay, future locale. I'm hoping to take them to Brazil.
Okay.
Almost all the artists that have been on Birds of Prey for any length of time, Ed Bennis, Joe Bennett, Paulo, they're all from Brazil.
Cool.
So I think that would be really fun, and
yeah.
I'm interested in that country. And the truth for me is, like, when people ask me what it is, I'm fascinated about the Chinese culture, the Asian culture, whatever. It's not just that culture. It's just that happens to be where I was able to travel.
Okay.
So far. And for me, 95% of the DC stories take place in three places: New York City, Metropolis, Gotham City.
Yep.
And we're all very used to those places and what they look like. And I think that if you can take a character like Batman and you put him in the Himalayas, then the reader can experience through that character's eyes more what he's going through.
Sure.
And what the culture there might be, or whatever hardships he's going through, or whatever's going on. And to me, it's just as interesting to set a story in rural Midwest as it is Beijing. It's just a new place that not everybody has experienced for them to experience right through along with the character. Because, you know, most people now know what those, Gotham City looks like, but they might not know what the Summer Palace in Beijing looks like. And so I like to do that. And I'm interested in all cultures anyway. I find that just very fascinating. And when I travel to another country, the part that I like, of course, I love all the history and the buildings and all that, but the part that really fascinates me is trying to see the world through their eyes and their perspective. And I just think that makes really good and compelling stories.
Do you try to, like, find people and talk to them, natives and stuff, and...
I do, and I've had some fun things happen, and like even being in the restroom in Hong Kong, a whole group of, I was in a museum there, and a whole group of middle school girls were at the museum that day, and it's like they were all in the bathroom at the same time, of course. And so they just started talking to me, and they want to practice their English, and so we were asking questions back and forth, and you get to see that girls that age are really similar no matter where they are. I mean, they come from a different background, but things they're interested in and that excite them and stuff are very similar a lot of times.
That's cool.
And I found that interesting, and I have people come up, especially the kids, because they're just so hungry for, you know, finding out about the world. Now, in Beijing, it was a little bit different because they're a little more closed off than, like, Hong Kong.
Sure.
So it's just, and even that contrast was very interesting to me. And it was interesting to watch what they see on TV, to get on my laptop and see what websites are banned there that you can't look at. And just all of that stuff is just very fascinating.
Wow, that's really neat. Storm King asks, Gail, how much detail do you put in your scripts for camera angles and shots? And do you ever supply breakdowns for your penciling team or vice versa?
I really don't supply breakdowns per se, because generally the artists that I work with are fantastic at laying out stuff, and they really don't need me to do that. I do try to put in points of view or camera angles or movement as suggestions. If they think that something would better serve the story in another way, then I'm open to that, and they're open to, you know, change it. The only thing is, I'm told that a lot of writers don't choreograph their fight scenes, and I do like to choreograph those because I feel like you can tell a lot about character points by the way they're fighting and what they do under extreme physical stress and what they say and how they react and all that. So I do choreograph those probably more than a lot of other writers do.
That's cool. So there are distinctive fighting methods for each character that you, you know.
Right, I try to, because cool. I think it's more interesting than having everybody have the same style, the same way with than having everybody have the same dialogue, you know.
Have you ever written in Marvel style?
Doing just the plot and then do a dialoguing later?
Yeah.
Yes, I have now. It's not my favorite way.
No, I was just curious. Because it sounds like not many people do it anymore.
Yeah, I think what they're saying is a lot of people have gone to full script. I just, you know, started that way, and so it has become what I'm most comfortable with and what I like to do, and I can get more across that way. I find it much more difficult to do Marvel style.
Storm King also asks, they'd love to see you write a Roy Harper mini. Have you ever considered it?
I like that character a lot. I just think that if there's ever a mini of that, I hope that Devin Grayson writes it. She has a terrific handle on that character, and I think that would be great.
That's cool. Mary Nome asks, Gail, please feel free to disregard my question if this is something you've been asked ad nauseum. Since the time of the notorious Women in Refrigerators list, essays and websites that first sparked serious discussion of the role, characterization and treatment of women in comics, what has been your observation regarding the issue? Has there been a conscious or even unconscious shift in the way creators treat their female characters? Is the world of comics evolving into a world where characters of both sexes are starting to receive equal treatment?
Well, it's kind of interesting about Women in Refrigerators. I really never meant for that to be an indictment of male comic writers or male comic readers, per se.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to simply ask the question, why are all the good female characters being depowered or stuck in wood chippers? And I really didn't go at it with necessarily an agenda, like I'm really going to prove my point that they're really abusing all female characters and things like that. But the truth is Batgirl was always one of my favorite characters. She had the red hair, and I could identify with that as a kid, and she was really strong, you know, and all those things. And then she ended up in a wheelchair, which now, of course, I think is great that she's become Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of wanted to see what people would have to say about that.
Sure.
And personally, in retrospect, I feel that primarily these things were being done just for shock value, and they didn't really care about the female characters, and they didn't really think they had a female audience, so it basically was becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, no good female characters means no female audience, basically. And I even felt at the time that this trend was already dying out because there was becoming a lot of new female characters being created that were supporting their own books, like Lara Croft and Witchblade and many others. So I think the newer generation of writers began to see that it was a problem and started to fix it. And I really never believed that that site had any real impact until I actually started going to the high level industry meetings where it actually was talked about.
Okay.
So that made me realize that, yes, it, is having some effect. However, now I feel like we're having a little bit of a resurgence in the trend. So it's kind of, that's kind of a weird feeling too. But also, I think we're seeing more attention paid to viable female characters who can maintain their own books.
You bet.
You know, I think Black Canary is becoming, you know, a bigger force and a lot of other ones. So it's kind of a one step back, two steps forward kind of deal.
Yeah, it seems too that the male, if I may, and I wonder what you think, it does seem like a lot of your peers, they have kind of stepped up. And there's some really good, from a man standpoint, it seems like a lot of great writers that are men that do seem to have a handle on.
Exactly. And so my point is exactly that, you know, it doesn't take a female writer to write a great female character. That, and Women in Refrigerators was never meant to prove that, you know, prove the point that that is the way it is, because it's not.
Very cool. And no one has ever asked the reverse, have they, in terms of how well women write men? And there's you, there's Louise Simonson, who did that run on Superman as well. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. I just think that there hasn't been as many to compare that, you know.
Okay.
But I don't think that being a woman means you can't write great male characters. I really don't think gender, everybody has their own point of view. And just because you're male doesn't mean you share the same point of view as every other male on the planet. And just because you're female doesn't mean you share the same point of view as every other female on the planet. And that's kind of what I try to get across, is that the sooner we can break down that type of thinking, the better everybody will have it, characters and creators and everybody.
Very cool. Reasonable Fan asks, Gail, given that the all-new Adam is both a number one of a new ongoing series and a replacement of a Silver Age icon, did you approach this project differently than you would approach a miniseries or a run on an existing book?
I approach every project I do as if it was the number one book, even, you know, the number one selling book in the industry, even though in reality it isn't. I try to put my whole heart into it. It doesn't matter to me if it's D-level or, you know, the summer's biggest crossover. I just try to do the best I can do to make it the best book I can possibly make. It's not like if I had to do what they would call a D-level fill-in book, that I would write it like I thought that's what it was.
Okay.
So to me, it doesn't matter. I just put in whatever I can. And anyway.
Okay.
I don't know if I answered that question. Did I answer the whole question? Was there more about the Adam there?
No, I think you handled that fine. We'll go to number two. Did you find it easy or difficult to work from Grant Morrison's proposal? Did you modify the concepts at all, or did you stick closely to what Morrison devised?
Well, Grant is awesome. I adore him. He's brilliant. All those things that I've told him and everybody else for years. And basically, with the all-new Adam, he planted some really fertile seeds, and now I'm left to tend the garden, is basically how it works. Hopefully, his kind of weirdness, offbeatness that he has and mine will make a very weird Indiana Jones on acid science fiction adventure comic. We're trying to give that twisted drive-in theater feel, and I just think people can think of Grant's ideas and my ideas as a double feature.
I don't know anything about the Gen 13 concept and very little about Wildstorm continuity, so what should I suspect from your new Gen 13 series?
I don't think you need to know anything about Wildstorm continuity to jump on with issue number one, first of all. And Gen 13 is kind of like the Teen Titans without the comics code. They're basically high school age kids that have been given the keys to the superpower car. And Talent Caldwell's art on this book is unbelievable.
Cool.
He has surpassed anything he's ever done in the past. I think people are going to be really surprised by this book. At first I was kind of skeptical that I could bring something new to it. But now I actually think it's one of the best things I've ever written.
Wow.
And definitely some of the best art, and I think if people try it, they'll stay with it. I'm really proud of it. And, you know, they're horny teenagers. What can I say? It's going to be awesome.
Looking back on your first few years of Birds of Prey, with the advantage of hindsight, is there anything that you would have done differently or wish that you had done?
I really actually had a pretty tight plan from the beginning, and some of it is just now coming to fruition. like some major points. I wanted to bring Shiva back for a long time and send Canary out on her own mission, have them trade places forever. Just a lot of things are just now coming up that I've kind of had in mind from the beginning.
Cool.
I think in hindsight I do miss the clock tower, but that wasn't really my call to make. So I do like having the airy one and the different things that have come out of losing the clock tower. And I guess I would have gotten in more male nudity if I could have.
Adam asks a few questions. What made you decide to take on the Atom as a new project? What interested you in the character or the concept?
Well, Dan came to me and said he wanted me to do this almost at my craziest. So right away I was in with that. I was like, okay. And then Grant's name was mentioned, and so I was in even deeper. And I just absolutely love the idea of having a young Asian guy take up the mantle of a major DC hero. I think it's important. I love anything like that that adds flavor and possibility. And I think that we need to start doing a better job of representing the world, or we're just not doing our job right. So I really believe in getting more diversity into the DCU. I think it's really important.
They ask how far you've got the initial plot concepts drawn, first 12 issues or beyond?
Pretty tight most of the time for the first 12 issues, and then as you're going, you know, I think about what I want to do beyond that as the stories are developing and stuff. I'll write down, oh, when this is done, I want to get to this. So
that's cool. Well, we see some familiar characters from any of the predecessor series in the first year.
I'm trying to think.
Oh, okay.
Not really in the next few issues or so that I'm working on right now. We haven't gotten too many of that, but that's not to say there won't be.
Okay. Will the all-new Atom appear in 52?
Okay, if I talk about 52, they will take me out in back of the shed and shoot me. Next question.
Do you have any plans to reintroduce Jean Loring into the title, Atom versus Eclipso Loring?
No, but I'm planning a Jean Loring Scarlet Witch crossover. I'm calling it the Crazy Ho Team Up.
Adam Wood asks, Dear Gail, being as frail and weak as you are, do you not agree that Bendis' relentless picking on you should be counted as a crime? And if you do agree, how should he be punished?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Yes, it's true that Bendis incessantly picks on me. He's so hurtful. He's mean and a bully, and he makes me cry. No punishment is bad enough for him.
Mr. Prince asks, Gail, you've done a great job of infusing Birds of Prey supporting characters, Savant, Crayote, Zinda, and Josh, with a lot of character, voice, and nuances that help support the main birds, Oracle, Black Canary, and Huntress. This really helps tell and enrich the storylines with some quirkiness of point of view. Where did you find the inspiration in developing each of them? Every one of them.
And those are just a few of the many voices in my head. Aren't you glad you don't live there?
Did Josh survive Infinite Crisis, and will we see him again in Birds of Prey?
Absolutely, he survived Infinite Crisis. Where would the DCU be without Josh? And in the alternate world, he's gay and hitting on Nightwing all the time.
Is that the Evil Earth 1 crime syndicate doppelganger? I like
exactly.
That. Okay. Torchbearer asks, your Hawk and Dove two-parter in Teen Titans was nothing short of phenomenal. Any chance of coming back to the book for another story arc?
Are you sure this isn't Rob Liefeld?
Would you be interested in doing an Injustice Society mini focusing on such memorable villains as Solomon Grundy, Johnny Sorrow, Gentleman Ghost, and Icicle?
I guess as far as the villains go, I'm more interested right now in Secret Six and the Society.
Okay.
But those are neat characters.
How many players have you no-scoped in Halo?
Is that a dirty term? What does that mean, no-scoped?
I don't know.
Come on, I suck at video games, and I suck worse at Halo, so whatever it is, I probably have none.
Crawford Crowe, are we going to see Thorne reemerge in the future? Good question.
8-Ball says very near future.
Cool. With Zinda being a fixture in Birds of Prey, will there be any upcoming stories that touch on the Blackhawks?
Well, like I said before, I love the Blackhawks, so I do hope to get to what happened to them, but it's not going to be for a while.
Did Deadshot's daughter ever get her Foxy and Crow umbrella?
People were paying attention, weren't they?
Yes, I remember that.
I think actually Deadshot shot someone to get it for her, and now she has the whole entire Fox and Crow bedroom set.
Bear Duvessa asks, under your World Dominion plan, or Domination plan, what will be the benefits for those of us who have proclaimed our allegiance to your army?
Well, your lives will be spared, and you'll get all the cross-gen comics you can eat.
Pat Loika and a lot of others have asked, were there any characters that you had considered to use for the Secret Six or Birds of Prey that you couldn't get, that DC said no?
Yeah, I really wanted Black Orchid for the Villains United, but she's a Vertigo property, so we couldn't get her.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, then I wanted Owlman, and he was being used by Kurt Busiek at the time. And for Birds of Prey, I would really hope to use the Joker at some point, and it still may happen if all goes well.
That's cool. Is Birds of Prey considered Batman family book?
It's not in, like, with the Bat editors at this point.
Okay.
But it's part of that.
I mean, I know that, yeah, you guys, like, get pulled into the various miniseries and stuff like that. And, yeah, I was just wondering
right,
if that was still the case.
Yeah, but we still can't use the characters very much.
Interesting. All right. Steve Zegers, do you feel any kind of special responsibility when you're writing female characters? Do you ever feel like there are things that you don't want to do with certain characters because of it? I'm not saying you should, just wondering about a female writer's perspective.
I really don't approach projects with that in my brain so much. My favorite type of characters to write are characters like Captain America, Black Canary, The Spirit, the ones that can really get beat down hard and then come back even stronger than before.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter to me if it's a male character or a female character. It all just goes by individual characters. And as far as stories, a lot of people, I think, what they're asking is, you know, do you want to do stories about rape? Do you want to do things of that nature? And I think there's probably some good stories to be told in mainstream comics about that, but I just haven't seen really any yet that seem real that I think really do justice to it. So, I don't know. It's a hard question for me because it's just not the way I think. I'm more of at this point an equalist. So the way I approach things and think about is, you know, that character in particular, not whether it's a female character or a male character per se.
Put me down for hooking you and Darwin Cook up on The Spirit. I'd like to see that.
Oh my God, that'd be awesome.
That'd be really cool.
Love him.
And Steve also asks if you'd write a new version of Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, for laughs, please. I'd like to see that.
No, but I'll write a Lois Lane's boyfriend, Superman.
That would be good. Write that down. That's good. I like that. Greg asks, Gail, does Catman hate Mondays? If so, why not bring back an anorexic calendar? Man, this is archenemy.
Are these real questions?
They got to do this stuff.
Okay, no. Actually, what Catman really hates is poachers and being checked for fleas and ticks.
Why is it? Go ahead.
And Calendar Man sucks so bad that he's actually awesome just the way he is.
Why isn't Deadshot more popular with the ladies? Leaving the toilet seat up shouldn't be even an issue with him.
Yeah, well, we'll put that on eHarmony.com. Floyd Lawton, I like bullets and guns. I am accurate at peeing.
Explain Gus Beezer's relationship to his cousin Peter Parker. How many times removed are they? Who was the first to leave the old country, the Beezers or the Parkers? Would Gus inherit any of Peter's fat Avenger salary should the worst happen?
Why is this person obsessed with Gus?
I like this. How come he never showed up to any of the Parker funerals, including all the times Aunt May has died? Seems downright heartless of him.
Well, you know, the truth is that the Gus Beezer continuity is correct. It's just that they've been screwing up the Spider-Man continuity for 40 years.
Were you ever approached to do The Flash for an arc? I think you'd be a great fit. What with all your reverence for peripheral characters in the DC Universe, I could see you doing an awesome job with the Rogues. Geoff Johns was cool like that. Did you ask for a Y chromosome when Christmas had become Geoff Johns?
Hey, I'm fond of my girl chromosomes.
You're here.
Yes, actually, I was asked about The Flash, but I just didn't have enough time.
Okay. Maybe down the road, though?
I don't know. Who knows?
All right. Ben Weldon, what is your all-time favorite comic issue?
Ah! My brain exploded. You know, the truth is I had quit reading comics for a while, and it was Kingdom Come number one that brought me back to comics. So I would have to say that would be my all-time favorite issue, just because if I hadn't have picked that up and come back to comics, then probably wouldn't be writing comics now. So that did it for me.
If you could explode the crotch of any Marvel character, which Marvel character's crotches would you explode?
Definitely Joe Quesada. He probably wouldn't even notice that.
That guy Lobo asks, Miguel, I adore Birds of Prey, and one of my favorite issues was the recent one where Babs reveals she's Oracle to Jim Gordon. It was when Gordon was still retired, and I thought having him as a reoccurring character in Birds of Prey was a really exciting idea. Now he's back in Batman with fully working legs. I guess someone in the family should get them. I was wondering if you had any plans to use him again.
To use Jim Gordon?
Yes.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite characters because every book he's in, he brings a lot of heart to, and I really love that. And the next year of Birds of Prey is going to be pretty Oracle-centric, so I don't think we can do an Oracle-centric book without having some of her dad in there.
Speaking of the Gordon clan, any chance of seeing Jim's mysterious son, Jim Gordon Jr.?
Well, I heard that he's becoming the new Spectre.
Is that real? Christmas is done. That was fun.
Would I give away real secrets?
So he's like Chuck on Happy Days, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. Didn't he only appear in like one comic?
Yeah, it was only Frank's year one, right? All right. Power Surge asks, all Catman shit aside, Villains United was arguably the best Infinite Crisis mini to spin out, arguably, the most pertinent repercussions to the stories of 1 year later. So that's nice.
Yeah, thank you. That was very sweet.
What was the biggest challenge working on the mini? Did DC give you the roadmap? Here's the end result we need. Get there how you want. Or was the process more constricted?
Well, the biggest challenge, I'd have to say, is that the big name villains were just not available. There was no Joker, no Two-Face, no Brainiac, none of the cosmic villains, like Mongol or any of those, were available at all. And so I had to kind of think, well, what can we do without villains on a villain book? But actually, I think one of the reasons the series became so fun is because the characters that we did use don't normally get the spotlight, and we were able to really spotlight them, and I mean, create a couple new ones and create a different kind of team. And it started originally, I had a pitch in for the Secret Society of Supervillains. That was pretty well received by DC. And then when they started talking about the Crisis, we ended up modifying it to mesh with the Infinite Crisis stuff. And then when they brought Dale in, he was such a huge part of making that book fun because he put his whole heart into it, too.
You bet.
And I think that in the end, not having the big villains was a really good thing.
Now, it's interesting because
I guess the challenge turned out to be one of the best things to happen.
Well, and it's funny because I understand what you're saying about the ultimate power from a power standpoint, but it never felt like these were C or B villains. I mean, these were big, you know, there were a lot of, like, you know, Black Adam and various people like that where it seemed like that was a powerful team still.
Right. But the main six that were going against the society,
we
didn't have any of the big guys available for that at the time. But yeah, we got to use some of the other ones sort of in and out. But as far as using Joker, you know, who we think is a huge DC villain, Brainiac, you know, we just didn't have that.
No, I hear you. Supersonic says, if you could write a crossover miniseries with any two and only two Marvel and DC characters, who would they be?
Well, my ultimate crossover would have to be She-Hulk and the Birds of Prey, because then we could call it She-Bop. And that just made me laugh.
And Cyndi Lauper thanks you for the royalty. Very nice. Beast of Yucca Flats, are there any creators out there you still haven't met but would like to?
Oh, of course. So many. I think the ones that come to mind first are Joe Kubert, Alan Moore, Dan Lee, of course. And then I'd like to meet Ed Dennis. He was the first artist, you know, on Birds of Prey when I first started doing it. And
you guys
really
never met?
No, no.
That's wild.
In fact, he doesn't really speak much English, and he works through an interpreter.
Okay.
So I never talked much to him other than, you know, a couple words, actually, without going through the interpreter. So I would love to meet him.
Was it more email through the interpreters then, when you guys would discuss the stories and stuff?
Right.
Okay. Red Barons asks, what was Huntress trying to say when she commented to Dick Grayson about him wearing his wallet in his front pants pocket?
Don't you know what they say about guys who wear their wallets in their front pockets?
Nerd.
I don't know. I think if you don't know, it's not my job to tell you.
Muy me. I'm going with that for your pronunciation, believe me. Where do you find inspiration for your stories? Do you do anything to get into the minds of the characters that you write? Peyote?
Lots of caffeine.
I'm just offering that to you. I wasn't asking. Peyote?
Actually, for me, I went to university as a theater major.
Mm-hmm.
And although I didn't graduate, sadly, I went to hairdressing school after. But they teach you there how to build character.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to do also a lot of skit writing and playwriting and then acting and things like that. And learning how to build character from the ground up was one of the really important things that I took from that experience. And so when I build character when I'm writing, that's what I draw on.
Is it the Stanislavski method, or is it Uta Hagen, or a combination? Or?
It's just kind of a combination plus what I've added that works best for me.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll write the dialogue, and then I have to say it out loud and see if it sounds right. Or if I can't do the accent, I'll have someone else do it and see if it sounds right. And there's just so many things that it probably take forever to really explain it. And I think most writers would probably say that inspiration for characters and things probably comes from everywhere. You never know where it's coming from. I just know how to build a character and to get a dynamic going between the characters that are going to be appearing together.
Okay, let's see. Now the real questions. Cake versus cream puffs. Which is more delicious?
Anything with a soft, gooey center is automatically delicious.
Sleeping fluffy kittens versus whittly, clumsy, tail-wagging puppies. Whose cuteness wins all?
Did I mention that Bendis loves Catman? Now that is cute.
Stealthwise asks, have you ever had aspirations to write in other media? Television, film, plays, gum wrappers?
Gum wrappers. Yeah, that's my next big goal.
Bazooka Joe.
Yeah.
Deconstruction time, yes?
I could write those jokes. What does bread wear to bed? Jammies.
Jammies, nice. You're perfect.
Actually, I have written one JLU episode for television.
Yes, you did.
So that was a lot of fun. And I'm working on a children's novel right now in my spare time.
That's cool.
And some people have been talking to me about writing for video games and doing screenplays, and, you know, I haven't done those things, but that would be fun to try someday. But I have to say, in the end, comics is my favorite. I like the energy and dynamic of working with a great artist and what that brings. And things can be done in comics that can't really be done anywhere else. There's so many infinite possibilities that intrigues me the most.
I'm going to ask you more because Gordy Steve acknowledges that double date episode of JLU. What did you find the difference in terms of writing a television script like that as opposed to writing a comic script? Did you just write the story or did you...
Well, they came to me with a plot.
Okay.
And said that they really enjoyed the dialogue in Birds of Prey, and so they were really looking for that type of snappy dialogue, and
mm-hmm.
so they gave me a rough plot. And instead of working like with one editor, you're working with more people than that because you've got editors and producers and things like that who all have a say. But, you know, it was just really fun, really. And when you're working with Bruce Timm and Dwayne McDuffie and people like that, it was just a great experience.
That's cool. Do you have any pipeline to the Legion cartoon that's coming out from Cartoon Network?
I don't know yet.
Okay. Now let's go to Gordy Steve's question. I would guess that the majority of people who have read superhero spandex titles are male. What key elements are missing from this type of book that put off women readers, or writers for that matter? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I can't speak for everyone, obviously. But I did ask a few years ago, every comic book, female comic book reader and creator that I could get to listen to my question, what comic brought them into comics.
Mm-hmm.
And the four titles that came up pretty much exclusively were X-Men, Teen Titans, Sandman, and Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Wow.
And so I started thinking, well, what do those things have in common, if anything, that would create that, you know, bring female readers into it? And what I saw was that the writers paid very close attention to the characters and the way they interacted with each other. They all had strong emotional character content.
Okay.
And I think that women, and I'm sure men too, but I think women really respond to that, to having something they can really hook onto emotionally. And all of those comics, if you look at them, have the genre elements in them. They've got the horror, the fantasy, spandex. They're definitely, you know, comics. But they had very compelling character interactions. Not just the characters being compelling, but how they interacted with each other. And I think that sometimes our even most popular comics miss that.
Okay.
And I think that if everyone paid more attention to that when they were creating it, that we probably would have even more female readers. And breaking into comics is hard as a creator for male and female. So I'm hoping that as more women break into comics, which they are, it'll encourage another generation to break in, just like I was inspired by Jill Thompson and Amanda Connor and Devon Grayson and Trina Robbins and those women. It would be really neat to think that there's a girl out there reading Birds of Prey right now and thinking they could do it too, and then they become the next generation.
And obviously, I would assume that you're getting a great
response. Sorry, did I answer the question? That was kind of a rampage.
No, you absolutely did. That was fantastic. You must be getting a great response from Birds of Prey, I would assume, from a female audience.
It seems to be a lot of female readers as well as male readers. And I get, when I'm at conventions, I do get a lot of male readers coming up and saying, thank you so much, because you got your Birds of Prey got my girlfriend or my wife or whoever to read comics.
That's cool.
And that makes me happy. So I think, you know, that it has done that for a lot of people.
Very cool. Elvis Guy asks, what is the
Elvis Guy.
What is the one thing you'd love to do with Birds of Prey that you know DC would not let you do?
Well, I have to tell Elvis Guy's story first.
By all means.
He kept telling me forever that he was going to present me with a can of oysters because his family cans these special oysters. And I saw him at a convention last year, and he's really cute, and he's got the rockabilly look and the great pompadour and everything, and he's walking by and introduces himself, and he starts to walk away, and I'm like, hey, what about the oysters? You promised. And so he got down on his knees and presented me with a can of these oysters, and everyone standing around was like, what the hell? No one knew what was going on, but it was so hilarious that I really appreciated that from him. I still have my can of oysters.
I was going to say, how are the oysters?
I didn't eat them. I saved the can so I could remember Elvis.
So answer his question. What is the one thing you'd love to do with the Birds of Prey that you know DC would not let you do?
Well, I think that they probably would not let me give them all massive yeast infections and send them out to fight Brainiac, because even he's afraid of girls with yeast infections. But, you know, I never asked them, so maybe they would.
Here's a question from Shrike. My question would be, do you ever feel like you have to compromise any principles to work in the comics industry? Your earliest efforts were known to point out damages that were brought onto female characters by primarily male writers in the comics mainstream, and since then, most of your work is alongside many of these same creators. And no, I'm not pointing this out as any kind of slam against you, but I think it's a good and tough question for an interview. You should know how I feel about your body of work.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. I think probably the closest that I ever got to having a crisis of conscience was when I was writing Agent X. A new editor came aboard, and he really didn't like what I was doing with the book, and he wanted me to change the book in a way that I didn't think was funny, and it had been, a funny book, kind of darkly funny up till that point. I didn't think it was funny or very interesting to me. And it wasn't all his fault. Some of it was because I was very inexperienced at that time, too, at how to handle these kinds of things. But I just came to the point where I felt like I could compromise and stay on the book, which I did really love the book, or I could quit and risk being blackballed from comics. And it was really painful, and I just didn't know what to do. I was very inexperienced at it and everything, and I finally had to go with my gut feeling, which was I really didn't think it was worth putting out a book that I didn't believe in at all. So I decided to quit and told myself I could always go back to doing hair again. And that was kind of my moment of learning how much I could compromise and how much I couldn't. And it was just came down to I just didn't feel I could write a book and would be good at writing a book that I just didn't believe in at all.
Sure.
That might sound silly, but I do take that stuff really seriously. But as far as, like, compromising my own personal beliefs or anything like that, I don't know. You know, DC's been really good about valuing my input, and they know I come from a different point of view than a lot of the creators that they work with. I guess the crazy point of view, I don't know. But they just seem to be really supportive of that, and I appreciate that. And they let me put in different things that are kind of quirky and different, like in Secret Six and Villains United and even Birds of Prey. So I really do appreciate that from them.
I know that 452, obviously all the creators in that, had a big creator jam session about direction and things. Have you been involved in anything like that similar at DC with a bunch of writers and editors?
The closest thing probably was when I was working on Action, because
okay.
they do have a Superman Summit meeting once a year, every year, and I was working on Action at the time. So, you know, Superman is something that, you know, when there's four books or three books or, you know, plus JLA and everything going on with Superman at once, they have to coordinate that. So, yeah, with that, we definitely did. And with Villains United and trying to tie all that in with Infinite Crisis and stuff, you know, we did talk about things. A lot of stuff was on a need-to-know basis. But, and I get calls from Dan, this is what we're doing, and what do you think we could do in Birds of Prey for that, or in, you know, whatever book I'm working on. So
okay.
we have some of that. But it's not like with 52 where the four guys are writing all the issues. I haven't been involved in a project like that.
Do you ever see yourself like, I guess you did, and I enjoyed your revelation on your blog about Bill Gemmis that you have co-written before. How is co-writing for you in general?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last one. I got
that's okay.
Working in the ear.
No. Yeah, is Timmy out of the well yet?
Pardon me?
Is Timmy out of the well yet by you? My God. Is he okay? What kind of dog have you got, by the way?
I have two. I have one very short, fat, hairy Sheltie, and then I have a rescued, very tall, skinny, barely any hair greyhound.
Wow. What are their names?
The Sheltie's name is Static, which is named after Dwayne McDuffie's Static Shock.
Very cool.
He's got black hair and a white lightning bolt ruff around his neck. And then the other one's named Skiro.
What was that again?
Skiro.
Skiro?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the etymology.
Well, it's kind of from that Italian artist term for dark and light, meaning chiaroscuro.
Oh, okay.
And he's kind of a white greyhound with black.
That's cool. And I was asking, how is it working with another writer?
It always depends on the writer. I haven't had any bad experiences, but I haven't actually done too many co-writing type of projects either. So
okay. And we're going to wrap up with some word association from Michael Painter. And these are interesting. And he says,
I love word games.
There you go. I feel like some word association would be good for this radio podcast. Here you go. Bring the first word that comes to your mind about the words John Byrne.
Brilliant.
Brian Bendis.
Catman Submissive.
Scarlet Witch.
Boring.
Oysters.
Elvis Guy.
Tom Yum Soup.
I don't know what that is.
Curry.
Mulligatawny soup with pita and hummus.
I was thinking Arthur. Oracle.
Big Sister is watching you.
Gypsy.
Better than Scarlet Witch.
Lady Blackhawk.
She likes the fancy.
And that's the list of questions, and Gail will give you this opportunity if you wanted to plug anything and let anybody know about things coming up. Of course, we're looking forward to the all-new Adam and Jen 13.
Woo! No, I just want to thank everybody for being supportive on the message boards and all the people that came up with the questions. They were awesome questions, some of them hard, some of them funny. And anyway, I thank you guys, and I thank you, John, for making it easy.
It was my pleasure, and I know I speak for all the message board people that contributed to this and people listening as well. We love what you're doing. You're doing a great job, and keep
it
up.
And you guys keep loving it, and then I'll get to keep doing it.
Very cool. Are you going to be in San Diego or any of the cons this summer?
I am going to be in San Diego, actually, yes.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing you then.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't been there for 4 years, and I love San Diego, and it's going to be a blast.
Well, there you go. That's your chance to see Gail this summer, folks, San Diego. So thanks for your time, Gail.
Oh, thank you.
That's Gail Simone. Keep your eyes open for books like Birds of Prey, Secret Six, The All-New Atom, and Gen 13 from DC and Wildstorm Comics. And that'll do it for this edition of WordBalloon.com. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Keep coming back to WordBalloon for updates on upcoming episodes. WordBalloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2006.